A young dark-haired boy in a back garden says, "Why did you put it here?" He holds his face as he says, "Oh God." Now sitting with his mother, Mum was trying to find sausages. She smiles at him. Then he says, "I heard some..." Then, like this, he runs about the garden, littered with fallen apples. A young blonde girl plays with a wheel. He says, "When I close my eyes, I see the explosion happening again." He stares with his large dark eyes. Aerial footage of explosions in what looks like blocks of flats. Bright orange blasts, then plumes of grey smoke. Before the war, the Ukrainian city of Mariupol had a population of 430,000. More civilians were killed here than in any European city since World War II. A teenager walks along a footpath and asks, "Are you filming?" Someone replies, "Yes." This is the story of Mariupol, told and filmed by people who lived here. There were refugees sheltering in the theatre who fled the suburbs, hoping to save their lives. I decided to record what happened on my phone because of the intensity of this war, the horror of it. The footage shakes, and people lay on the ground in a park. It's getting closer. Let's run away. It's like this every day, 50 times a day. Mummy, Jesus, Jesus, Mummy, save us. What Mariupol became over the past 5 to 7 years, that European, beautiful, cozy city, is gone. It's dying, dying before our eyes. They stand up. Mariupol, the people's story. The sun shines over the city of Mariupol before the war. Blocks of flats sit alongside a domed building with a number of small and golden domes. I was born and raised in Mariupol. This is the city of my childhood. For me, Mariupol was never a city just to live in. It was the meaning of life. A woman with curly blonde hair. Alevtina, presenter, Mariupol TV. I was the presenter of the TV show Morning in Mariupol. Every morning I said, "Good morning, Mariupol." It was very, very cool. Program footage. My job is all about Mariupol. I explored the city and all its nooks and crannies, sights and culture. On a street, the city garden, walk to the sea, walk along Central Avenue, eat some snacks. Let's go. Mariupol's real treasure is its people, who are always very friendly, open and kind. She sits in her room and smiles.
The city, it's so multi-layered. There is so many cultures, like, woven into it.
Diana, artist.
Diana Berg.
On a TV set. Diana, it has been your dream for this festival to be held in Mariupol. She replies, "I liked the format very much and thought that something similar should be done here."
The city has become much more European. I took my friends and we drove to the seaside. Everyone was like, "Wow, Mariupol, it's so beautiful, it's so nice."
A young woman with long hair plays piano and sings with a girl. A boy holding the camera says, "Doesn't she have a beautiful voice?" I'm talking about Hannah.
Я про Аню, если что.
Teacher Hannah says in the video, "We just had a funny situation."
Ребенок объясняла,
что в Мариуполе.
Now she says, Mariupol was flourishing. Film of Hannah and a man at night by colourful fountains. My husband Kirillo and I met a year ago. We looked at each other and it was love at first sight. 2 weeks later, he proposed. Photographs of the couple on their wedding day. Anna wears a dress with long lace sleeves and a short veil. A year ago, I married Kirillo. After about a month, I found out I was pregnant, so there were three of us on the honeymoon. She smiles. Then, a black and white photograph of the couple with their baby. Bright lights in a snow-covered city square at night. A colourful Christmas tree stands in the centre. Diana's singing.
I spent last New Year's Eve in Mariupol. And this New Year's Eve was beautiful. Everyone was like, well, let's step into the new, happy, beautiful 2022.
She dances at a party.
But we were all alerted by the Russian troops.
More than 100,000 Russian troops amassed on Ukraine's border. A map of the area showing Mariupol close to the Russian border. Vladimir Putin says, I will start with the fact that modern Ukraine was entirely created by Russia.
Everyone listened to Putin's speech.
It is an unchallengeable part of our history, culture, and spiritual space. Ukraine never had a stable tradition of being a true state. The city at night time, with cars on the streets and lights shining in the distance. Diana, Hannah, and Alevtina look thoughtful. Day 1, 24th of February 2022. Lights in the darkness move in and out of focus. Hannah says, I woke up to the sound of artillery, and I fed the baby and checked Facebook on my phone. Mobile phone footage of military vehicles in the street. Diana.
I was filming everything that was around me because I was looking at it from my balcony and saw it.
Mariupol right now. Come on, dudes, hit them. A blonde woman says, my brother called and said, we're leaving the city. Get your child ready. We're leaving. Oksana, anesthetist, Mariupol Regional Hospital. I said, I'm not leaving because I'm working. What work, he asked. The war has started. I said, well, I'm a doctor. Someone has to go to the hospital and help. I'm not leaving. I'm going to work. She looks emotional. Then footage of houses with broken windows and damaged buildings. This is how Putin is fighting us, who said civilians wouldn't be harmed. Film of the destruction. Putin says, I made a decision to carry out a special military operation. To this end, we seek to demilitarize and denazify Ukraine. In his address, he continues, it is not our plan to occupy Ukrainian territory. We do not intend to impose anything on anyone by force. In the footage, the man says, here are more damaged houses. A family photograph. Oksana says, I have a husband and a son, Nikita. My son is 7 years old. Nikita didn't understand why Russia attacked us. He said, well, what, why? As an adult, it's difficult for me to answer why. She looks emotional. Day 3, Russian troops are just 17 miles from the center of Mariupol. Then footage of a tank emblazoned with a Z. I texted my dad saying, "Dad, my kids are scared. There are shots. Civilians are dying." My dad said, "No, that's not true. You're making all this up." A dark-haired woman, Victoria. My father lives in Russia. He totally takes Putin's side and supports the special operation, as they call it. He texted back saying, "It's not true. Your forces are doing the shelling. You should bake a pie and greet the Russians, bowing at their feet, and thank them for saving you." I told him, "If any Russian soldier comes into my house where my children are, I will cut their throat. They won't stay in my house." Footage of soldiers sitting and smoking. Some wave at the camera. Nighttime.
I'm feeling like the most scared in my life. When you're scared, or when there is war around, oh yeah, it comes, it's coming. Fuck.
People running, one with a shopping trolley.
You only hear the shilling and it's getting closer and closer and closer. They started hitting the city center.
Explosions in blocks of flats.
You find yourself in a horror movie.
Orange flames and black smoke pouring from windows.
There were several air strikes. All this shit around is scary.
Billowing smoke in the distance. Then running along a street, past a body lying on the ground by railings. Now in an alley, a man peers round a corner, then runs back. It's heading here.
Сюда летит.
He crouches. Ready? Yes. A view of the path as they run across a car park towards another building. A map of Mariupol showing the Azovstal steelworks. Hanna says Kirillo was working at the Azovstal steelworks. He received a message saying we could hide in the bunker there. Ukrainian forces, including the Azov regiment, set up a base in the steelworks. Volunteers join them. In mobile phone film, Hanna says, "My husband went off to war today as a volunteer." Now in her room, she says, "I told him, if you go, I'll divorce you." But he knew I wouldn't do it. In the bunker, she says, "I want all those who are against us to feel what we feel." Then a photo of Hanna and Kirillo smiling. Kirillo said, "I really want us to have a baby girl as well. I promised we'd have a daughter if he came back." "You're taking children from their mothers and husbands from their wives. This must be punished." Hanna looks thoughtful. Explosions and smoke drifting across the rooftops. Then people hurrying into a building. "Everybody down. Come here." Darkness with occasional points of light. "Everybody go downstairs." A photo of a man in a shelter with a boy. Alevtina said, "My son didn't like the bomb shelter. It really upset him." Film shows him crying, "Mum, I want to be free." "We need to bring some water." "Mum, stop. It's safe here, don't worry." Please stop crying. It's safe here. It's scary at home. After heavy shelling, which blew out our windows, we grabbed everything we could and moved. The most horrifying thing I saw was a body wrapped in a sheet with a woman crying next to it. Alevtina swallows sadly and looks away. A glowing bunny rabbit light in the dark, with children sitting in the gloom. Oksana says, when the bombing intensified, we spent the night in the basement. It was damp and cold. There was loads of dust. The kids were coughing a lot. Hey, sweetie, do you want to sleep? Children sit under covers looking about. Oksana says, children want to be active, but with so many people around, they had to be quiet. They couldn't run around. Someone strokes a dog. It was very difficult, very difficult. The Russian bombardment destroys key infrastructure. The city has almost no power, running water, or phone signal. A woman with shoulder-length dark hair says, it feels like a nightmare, a ridiculous, illogical nightmare that I still can't escape. I feel like I'm about to be woken up and told, it was a dream, Yulia, it's okay. Film on her phone. This is what the yard looks like. This is what war looks like. Yulia, project manager. The missile landed right here in someone's yard. The bombing got worse, and we realized we were trapped. Every day, the city fell into an incomprehensible abyss. On film, a tire on the ground under a tree in a corner. This is the toilet for the whole yard. I won't show you any more. The sewers are blocked. This is how we live in the 21st century. I asked myself, what do I do next? How to survive? Outside, a woman buys an oven built from blocks. This is our communal kitchen. Hot food in Mariupol was a real luxury. While I was eating, the shelling started again. But having hot soup was much more important than saving your life. The film shows Yulia eating soup at a table outside, then placing some food on the ground for a dog. Oksana says the city was in chaos. We thought we wouldn't survive and accepted that. With tears rolling down her cheek, she continues, I wrote down my mum's number and put it in Nikita's pocket in case we got separated. So if someone found him, they could contact his relatives. She stops and wipes the tears from her face. Mobile phone film of people carrying a body, then others digging a hole in the ground. Take a look. People are burying their neighbors in their yard, right in their fucking yards. It's a disaster.
I'm just having a breakdown. Fuck. I don't know. I've never felt this shit, this feeling before, and I honestly don't know how to describe it. I'm just crying and crying. And I don't know. I hope I will survive.
A pall of grey smoke drifts over the top of a tall building and stark, leafless trees. Phone footage shows two men with a body in a street. Take him. Carry. The man's body is dragged over the rubble-strewn road. Help me. Where should we put him? There? Diana.
People were scared of both living and staying. It was the choice between two ways of being killed. Either the quick one, or like the very tiring and slowly one, if you stay in the city. We decided to leave the day we left. We saw leftovers of the cars, burning warehouses. We knew that it was like a very crazy decision and we have to stick to it. We were driving and then we see this column. Two tanks in this column that was driving. It was crazy. They were pointing the gun at us, like the tank gun. And we just drove through them. It was the most crazy moment.
A view of the couple in their car, driving with belongings piled on the back seat. Diana now films herself with her phone elsewhere.
I'm just escaped from Mariupol, and what I feel is that Mariupol is not planned to be occupied, but it's planned to be just destroyed. I left behind many people of Mariupol. People are suffering very, very bad. It's terrifying and I'm still shocked.
Day 8. Mariupol is surrounded by Russian troops. Phone footage shows wrecked cars, one upside down. Fucking hell. The person holding the phone nears the edge of a huge crater in the ground. It's 6 or 7 meters deep. The cars went flying. A group of people roll one of the cars upright. Alevtina says, "We found out what planes could do. They became our greatest fear, making you feel helpless, waiting to die in Mariupol." A white contrail snakes through the sunny blue sky. The sound gets louder and louder. It's the sound of death. You just bend over and cover your child with your body. Alevtina wipes away tears. One day, it hit our building. The view through a smashed window at an urban wasteland. It shook wildly, with an immense force. The bomb landed where we cooked outside, making a huge crater. I saw my husband digging someone out. Several men shouted that our neighbor, Vanya, was under the rubble. My husband took him by the hands. Another man grabbed his legs. Instead of a person, it was just skin holding bones and muscle. Not a single bone was intact. There was nothing whole. He was all broken. Tears fill her eyes as she speaks. Mountains of soil and building rubble litter the tops of cars outside a destroyed block of flats. Footage wandering through the remains of a building through a doorway to a man in a blue cap and red, white and blue vest. He's crouching as he plays a piano that's oddly in one piece in a room torn open to the sky. Day 10. Russia and Ukraine negotiate a green corridor so people can get out. The Mariupol Theatre becomes a meeting point. The building is marked on a grey map. Alevtina says, "Every day we went to the theatre to find out about the evacuation. We saw how many people were hiding there."
Яка велика кількість маріупольців переховуються у драматичному театрі.
the square ornate pillared building. This is where people are gathering for food. We serve children, women and elderly people first. The rest is for men. People who came to the theater said they had nowhere to go. Their house had been bombed, so they came to the theater. We said, let's find you a place. Sergei, actor, Mariupol Theater.
When they announced a green corridor for people to evacuate, a lot of cars came to the theater. The theater was completely surrounded by cars.
Then a policeman said there wouldn't be an evacuation today. That's when people started flooding inside. Victoria's young, dark-haired son, Artem, says, we were cheated. We were told that the buses were waiting for us next to the theater. We went there to check, but we couldn't find any buses. Then we heard very loud explosions, and we started to run. Victoria, we ended up in the theater by accident. My friend decided we should go there to get some rest and to keep the kids warm. We weren't even allowed to turn on a torch or light a candle because it was quite dangerous. We could hear planes. People huddle in the building, tightly packed under columns in torchlight. A man outside in daylight says, give us a corridor to take women, children and the wounded out. Please, I don't know who can do it. Stop this fucking madness. He walks off, wiping his eyes, looking emotional, leaving Sergei facing the camera outside the theater entrance. Smoke drifts across the city's horizon. Brown-haired Yulia looks somber. She says, what a nightmare. This is my yard. This is my home. For the first time in my life, I think I had a panic attack. For almost an hour, I couldn't breathe properly. I was hysterical. Phone footage shows a man's body lying in the street outside a ruined building. He's covered with a dirty sheet, except for the bottom of his jeans and his boots. They were my neighbors. We couldn't even bury them. The ground was so frozen, it was impossible to prise them from the road. The footage shows more bodies partially covered in the street, dried blood trailing from one of them. When you live in a civilized world, you know that if anything happens, if a person is hit by a car or gets sick, the emergency services arrive right away, an ambulance, the police. There's nothing here. People were killed and everyone walks by. Thank you, Putin. Thank you, liberators. 6 adults and 2 children died here. The phone pans round from the appalling sight of 2 covered bodies to the snow-scattered ground near a slide and seesaw in a children's play area. Blonde-haired Oksana says, I was torn between home and work. I told my son, you understand your mum's a doctor. You know I have to help other children. He said, yes, I understand. He cried whenever I left. He didn't want me to go. It's now too dangerous for Oksana to travel to work. She leaves her family and moves into the regional hospital. Emotionally, it was very difficult for me being separated from my family. Knowing nothing about how they were. Hospital staff flinch in a corridor as an explosion sounds. The situation in the hospital was critical. The entire floor was covered in blood. An emotional nurse wearing a face mask dabs her eye. A bloodied trainer lies on the floor. Injuries, wounds, trauma. A lot of children were among them.
Очень много детей было среди них.
A distraught young woman tenderly strokes a dead child's face before slowly covering the child with a soft blanket. A bleak wintry landscape of leafless trees and rooftops through a cracked window pane. The 9th of March is a day I'll never forget. For me, it was probably one of the worst days of the war. Footage of a block of flats rocks as an explosion erupts nearby. Day 14, Mariupol Maternity Hospital. Two people help a third between them to walk from the building. Others are leaving behind them in a light snowfall. A soldier asks an upset young boy, "Are you okay? Where's your mum?" "Come in. Calm down. Calm down. Don't panic." A pregnant young woman is now being carried quickly on a stretcher. The woman on the stretcher is called Irina. She is taken to the regional hospital where Oksana works. "When I saw her wound, straight away I knew it was going to be difficult." Irina is loaded into the back of a van. I vividly remember her taking my hand, squeezing it. She said, "Please don't save me. I don't want to live." The baby was taken out, showing no signs of life. It's the most terrifying thing I've seen in my life, packing a young woman into a black bag. With her baby. Who we laid under her breast. Oksana holds her hands together and bows her head as she wipes tears from her eyes. Gliding from the regional hospital on the map to the Azovstal steelworks on the other side of the city. Anna's feeding her baby in a dark space. Who's eating porridge here? We can already eat with a spoon. Well done. Azovstal is a city within a city. I think there were about 1,000 civilians there. My son, Svyatoslav, was the youngest. Film of Hannah smiling, holding him. There were about 40 bunkers. A white high ceiling in a room with drab brown painted walls. The room was very deep underground and damp. There are no nappies. We make them ourselves. The baby is suffering and everything is red and sore. A small boy is wearing a nappy made from a plastic bag. When you're down there, the feeling of time passing disappears. You can't tell day from night. The days feel like one big groundhog day, just like the film. Anna's husband, Kirillo, is based in another part of the steelworks. A photo of him in combat uniform. "Say hi to Daddy. It's okay, we're good. I pull my mother's hair." The last time Kirillo visited our bunker was on March the 11th. I didn't recognize him at first. I just saw a soldier in a helmet with a small beard. He was thin. He brought a book, Robinson Crusoe. He knows that I love reading. Later, the whole bunker read the book because the story was very similar to ours. We were in a bunker as if on a deserted island, cut off from the rest of the world. A blurred photo of the couple with their baby, Anna smiling in a pink coat. I remember saying goodbye. He said he loved me. He looked at me as if for the last time. I asked if he'd return. He didn't respond. He just left. Anna wipes away a tear. Zooming in slowly on the Mariupol theatre on the grey map. Phone footage shows a confusion of movement in the dark. Sergei says someone suggested writing children in large letters so that it could be seen from a plane. An aerial photo shows the words spelt out at either end of the red-roofed building. People kept asking me, Sergei, what do we do now? I said, calm down, everything will be fine. We have the word children. No one will shell or bomb a building with children and women. I was sure of that. Day 21, Mariupol Theatre. Victoria says, I took my daughter, Nastya, and went up to the first floor. I got some food and decided it was time to feed the kids. Artem says, my mum called me to eat. I said, no, I'm playing. Victoria smiles at him. I don't know why, but that day I insisted my son come with me. I forced him to go with me to the first floor and eat. Sergei, it was about 10:30 a.m. when my wife, Zhenya, said she needed to talk. We were just starting to chat when there was an explosion. Then darkness. For a few seconds, I didn't know what was going on. I was trying to figure out what happened. The airstrike was on the theatre, right in the centre. Victoria says, my first thought was, where are my kids? Sergei adds, I shouted, Zhenya, are you alive? She replied, and we started digging ourselves out. People filling the theatre in daylight. My son was screaming, Mummy. But I didn't hear my daughter's voice. I didn't hear her screaming. I didn't hear her crying. Phone footage shows smoke drifting from the theatre's roof. Right after the explosion, there was a lot of screaming. I remember a boy walking around, yelling, Daddy, Daddy. He was hysterical. Victoria continues, when I was trying to find Nastya, I was groping around frantically. When the smoke cleared, it was easier to breathe. Artem, then rocks started falling. Nastya was silent. Silent, just silent. Until that moment, Mum was trying to find her, and then Nastya said, Mum. I heard her scream, Mummy. I put Nastya on my shoulders and held my son's hand while we ran. We were stepping over dead bodies. Do you remember the way they were lying? Artem tilts his head to one side. Yes, lying like that, says Victoria. Eyes closed. I thought they were dying. Yes, you're probably right. Sergei says, I saw the body of a girl. She was maybe 8 years old. I knew I couldn't help her because her head was covered with rubble. Sergei struggles to keep his composure. That girl is the most terrifying memory. I see her in my dreams at night. He's shaking as he struggles to hold back his tears. Alevtina, I took two photos of the theatre. We were there about half an hour after the Russians bombed it. We realized we had to leave and get somewhere on foot. We'd be killed. The next bomb flying over Mariupol may hit us. Then my son started shouting, "Let's go, let's just pack and leave now." My parents and brother stayed. My mum remained because she couldn't walk that far. Perhaps she doubted the road would be safer than a basement. Photographs of bombed out buildings. We went towards the sounds of death, the sounds of aircraft. We saw that the city was mangled. Now a photograph of a thick black cloud of smoke rising from a ruined block of flats. I couldn't stop crying because I knew I might never see my parents and brother again. Russian troops are advancing towards the city centre. An aerial view shows a tank driving past a block of flats. Oksana, we wanted to stay in the hospital until the very last minute. But after the Russian military turned up at our hospital, even the tiniest hope we had disappeared. A phone pans across a long, empty room lined with windows on either side. Russian bastards. We changed out of our work clothes, pulled down our hoods, and walked out of the hospital, two at a time. Let's get behind the apartment block. It was very scary. There were destroyed buildings all around us. Watch your feet. A nearby explosion causes the phone footage to shake. Oksana continues, "At one point, I felt we'd never make it." A view gliding high over the city. When I got to a place with some mobile reception, I picked up a message from my husband saying they'd managed to leave. I cried with happiness, exhaled, and immediately felt so relieved. I started hoping that if they managed to escape the city, we could too. A tall, thick plume of dark smoke rises from distant buildings in a sickly yellow sky. Phone footage inside a building shows a dead body lying at the foot of concrete stairs. Here is the Russian world in all its glory. Heavy metal objects are flying overhead every fucking day. Someone's apartment is on fire. The man looks away suddenly, a second before an explosion. A building ablaze at night. Yulia says, day and night, the shelling of the city center didn't stop. The blaze rages through the building, and Yulia recounts, it was all on fire. We had to get out of the city and made the decision. There was no turning back. Thousands of people join convoys trying to escape Mariupol and get to Ukrainian-held territory. A long line of cars leads away from the city. As we neared the city limits, we saw a line of cars, maybe 4 kilometers long. Fear drives you on. You want to go faster because there's bombing. It became insanely scary. Now, footage of Oksana driving past a tank by the roadside. She says, "We went through a lot of Russian checkpoints. I thought they'd never end. Then we were home." She now breaks into a smile as she says, "When we heard good day in Ukrainian, I said, 'Can I give you a hug?'" It seemed unreal, because I thought I'd never see my parents again. And here we were, all together, all alive. It was the best day of my life. She wipes away a tear. Sitting in her hotel room, Alevtina now says, "As soon as I got out of Mariupol, I thought I had to go back and get my parents. I carried on walking with these thoughts. We went to the local school because it was a shelter for refugees." Alevtina meets someone who agrees to take her back to Mariupol to find her parents. "I left with a heavy heart. I hugged my child as if for the last time because I knew I might not make it back." A thick pall of black smoke smothers the city skyline, and Alevtina says, "We drove back to Mariupol. There was shelling, loud shelling. Planes were overhead. The driver stopped near the underpass. I ran through it to get to our yard. When I opened the door to go down to the basement, I saw my mother and brother. I was shocked. They were alive and looking at me. My mother said, 'We thought we were hallucinating.' Dad couldn't believe his eyes. We grabbed two bags with their documents and started running. As we ran out of the basement before getting into the street, the bombardment began." An aerial view of explosions throughout the city. Then, Alevtina's view from down on the streets. "As we were driving, we dared not believe until the last moment that we'd managed to escape." My husband and my son Hansik were waiting. When we jumped out of the car, I immediately hugged my boys so tightly, and my husband Boris lifted me up in his arms. Alevtina and her family are still in Ukraine. Now on the sandy banks of a lake, Alevtina is hugging one of her sons as he says, "I thought you would be killed. I was very, very scared." "When I came back, what did you feel?" "I was so happy. Do you remember how happy I was to see you? You hugged me very tightly, yes?" "Yes." Day 56. Russian forces control all of Mariupol, except for the Azovstal steelworks. A Ukrainian soldier says, "This is what Azovstal looks like today." Hanna recounts, "The Ukrainian military was waiting for help. They knew our situation was critical and we might all die there." But unfortunately, no one came. Day 61. Around 10 a.m., a huge bomb was dropped on us. The last thing I remember was some kind of light. I felt as if everything was falling on my head. We realized we were underground with no way out. Some cried, some began to pray. Then several soldiers from the military bunker arrived and started digging us out. There were many dead and wounded. A man wearing a face mask says, some kind of projectile, a crazy explosion. Look what happened. Two girls, why did they suffer? It's hard for me to understand anything. I don't know. A bird's eye view of the war-torn steelworks. Hannah says, when an Azov press officer came to see us, he said my husband had been wounded. Hannah's husband, Kirillo, says, it fucking hurts, bitch. Hannah recounts. He'd been hit by a sniper's bullet. Kirillo now says, there's one more which they haven't pulled out yet. Hannah, I found out he could have been evacuated by helicopter, but he refused because our son and I were still in the bunker. From Hannah looking lost in her thoughts to an overhead view of the desolate steelworks. April 30th was a very unusual day for us. It was the silence that woke us up. Day 66. Hannah has now spent more than 2 months underground. An evacuation of civilians from the Azovstal steelworks is agreed. Finally, we saw the sky. We felt a breath of wind. After sitting there for 2.5 months, thinking you might die and never see the sun and sky again. What's his name? Svetislav. That's a wonderful name. Incredible feelings. Anna breaks into a smile. The first thing I did was call my husband. He said he might not come back, and I should find another man, another father for Svetislav. He said, please choose a good dad for Svetislav, because I can't be that for him. Hannah takes a moment to wipe away her tears. Survivors from Mariupol are now living in other parts of Ukraine and across Europe. Oksana's working in a hospital. She now says, it's hard to start from scratch when you had something before. Besides, I'm a doctor and can be useful here. Oksana and her family are now living in Kyiv. I'm going through the puddles. Nikita, be careful. It's hard to live with such trauma. It's hard mentally, sometimes very hard. Nikita, let's go. But for my son's sake, you have to be strong. You have to set an example for him. Oksana's son is riding his scooter. You have to appreciate every day of this life. And we are trying. She offers a wistful smile. A bird's eye view of the bombarded steelworks. Hannah, I kept thinking the worst, thinking their bunker had collapsed and he was slowly dying from lack of air. But a few days later, a friend from France sent me a video where I saw my husband. He left Azovstal on crutches. A video with Hannah's dark-haired husband standing on crutches. Day 82, 16th of May, 2022. The Azov regiment starts to surrender. Kirillo and hundreds of Azov soldiers are taken prisoner. Anna's now holding her son while staring at a sign that reads, Free Mariupol Defenders. She now says, I live waiting for good news that my husband will return. Anna and Svetislav are in Germany. Every night I imagine this, seeing him in front of my eyes. I'm sure it will happen. Anna's now playing a keyboard with her son, sitting on the floor in front of her. When you have the chance every night to sit next to your loved one, to have a glass of wine, order a pizza, watch a series together, no matter how difficult your day was, it will be the happiest moment. This means you are truly happy.
Це буде означати, що ти дійсно по-справжньому щаслива людина.
Russia has now illegally annexed parts of southern and eastern Ukraine, including Mariupol. Vladimir Putin, I want the Kyiv authorities and their true handlers in the West to hear me now, and I want everyone to remember this. The people living in Lugansk and Donetsk, in Kherson and Zaporizhzhia have become our citizens. Forever. Oksana says, we got out of hell, and so I think only people from Mariupol can understand this hell. No one knows exactly how many people were killed in Mariupol. Ukrainian officials estimate more than 25,000. Hashtag BBC Panorama. Victoria and her children are still in Ukraine. Artem says, ever since Grandma died, I often sit by the window looking at the clouds to see if she will look down at me. So we have to buy a plane with a window that opens, and then we can touch.
Значить, треба купити самоліт, де можна відкрити скло і потрогати на ощупь.
Victoria asks, to touch your granny? Artem replies, yes, to feel her. Do you think it's possible? It's possible.